south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came up to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Let's talk about something that's completely un-PC. Now, I got an email from one of my expat insider seminar guys who's now down here permanently. He's learning his Spanish, getting his boots on the ground, way off the gringo tourist trail. And he writes to pose this touchy question. And I'll paraphrase this a bit. He says, Johnny, ready for something strange? I know how you like boots on the ground adventure stories, and here's one that I'm sure you may have never heard of before. Now, I usually go out for a walk every day for an hour for exercise, people watching and learning the lay of the land around me. So yesterday was no exception. About 2 blocks from my apartment, I noticed ahead of me a person laying halfway on the sidewalk and halfway on the street. Didn't think much of it because I've seen a couple other street people as well taking a snooze in public. You know, you see that everywhere, right? Now, I'm in a city called Chela, Guatemala, a perfect place to learn your Spanish. Way off the gringo tourist trail, and the gringos you do meet, well, they're always those do-gooders. And of course, a few people like me really bound on learning their Spanish. Anyway, I run across this lady laying on the street, and I get closer. I notice it's an indigenous female with the colorful Mayan garb and all that, and she looks relatively young, maybe 25-ish. She also has a couple of food items in a bag laying beside her, and it appeared she was taking a nap. It was 1 p.m. in the afternoon, and I figured maybe she was overindulging in some alcohol. So on my walk, I came back around the same way a while later, and she was still there. This time, there's a dog sitting beside her. She's still laying on her side exactly as before. Now, we're talking about maybe 2 hours have gone by, and she's exactly in the same position. So I get a little closer to her and look for signs of breathing. Johnny, I don't see any. I really think she's dead. Once again, my mind is racing. What do I do? Especially since my Spanish still pretty much sucks. So I was just about to go into my clueless gringo good Samaritan mode. I recalled one of your expat file shows where you said that some people, off the record, recommend that if you hit a motorcyclist, don't stop, just keep on going. Because no matter whose fault it is, there'll be a world of red tape and possible trouble. I figured this was no different and certainly didn't want to be wrapped up in a situation like that, especially, again, having crappy Spanish. So the Good Samaritan in me did not kick in and I kept going. She was already probably dead, and what could I do for her anyway at that point? So in closing, I have to say it was not an easy decision to make, but thanks to your willingness in a past show to talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly in Latin America, it might have kept me out of what have been a very sticky situation. So then maybe you'd like to comment on that. Thanks, Jerry. Well, Jerry, you know, in situations like that, we all have to make up our minds and have a good look around and see what's happening, eyes wide open and all that. Then make a decision on what to do, and hopefully it'll be a good one. But first, let me say, if she was a woman in the full indigenous Mayan robe, she probably wasn't drunk. In fact, I've been down here a long, long time, and I've seen a lot of local drunks. That means practically every Friday and Saturday night, if you're driving through the boonies or in a small town, you'll see some inebriated guys. I said men, not women. Alone or arm in arm, walking down the roads, staggering down the roads, I should say, holding each other up, singing cantina songs and kind of stumbling along, often in your lane. And those guys, by the way, are the ones that often get picked off by vehicles traveling at excessive speeds, and it doesn't help that out in the boonies, there's a huge shortage of streetlights, and if they have them, they're often burnt out. And I'll tell you, when you're out in the boonies, you almost always run into little grave markers alongside of the road. Sometimes they've got flowers planted on them, too. Why? Because that's where some kid, pedestrian, or drunk got wiped out by a car. What a way to be remembered, huh? R.I.P. on the 135-kilometer marker on the road to El Salvador. Anyway, about the unconscious lady. If she had been laying there in a drunken stupor, well, I'd say that was a first, because almost all the Latin American people I've seen that have been totally inebriated, that is, on the street and in very public places, have been Latinos, or more precisely, Ladinos. The fact is, pure indigenous people do not consider themselves Latinos. They're indígenas of a certain community or tribe. So as for the Latins or Ladinos, that would be the middle, lower middle class and poor people that are not connected with or associated with any indigenous tribe and therefore wear no indigenous colorful clothing. Now the Latins or Ladinos like to separate themselves completely from the indigenous culture around them. Now, as for the indigenous people, the ones with the colorful clothes, they seem to be a lot more reserved, in fact, introverted and quiet in public, and seem to have a lot better manners than the Ladino population in the community. Now, that's not to say the Latins or Ladinos don't have good manners. They have a lot better manners than many, many gringos do. It's just that when you see a group of native Latin Americans having a good time and whooping it up, you can bet it's not going to be a bunch of indigenous people with colorful clothes. The indigenous people have fun in their own ways, but they're not gregarious about it. In fact, if you talk to a Latin person enrolled in the regular crappy public school system, depending on which school you go to, there could be a lot of indigenous people mixed in with the regular Latino kids. And they're generally very humble and make no trouble at all, neither for other classmates or for the teachers. As one public school teacher told me, they're model kids, and often so shy in class they just never raise their hands to ask questions. So even though the indigenous people were the original settlers in Latin America by millennium, the vast majority of Latinos treat them like second-class citizens. Sound familiar? Oddly enough, even Latinos who look like they've got a lot of indigenous blood will simply deny it. According to them, they've all got Spanish blood running through their veins. In fact, if I've heard this once, I've heard it 1,000 times. Latin people insulting each other by calling each other Indios, which is short for indigenous. Considered a grave insult down here amongst Latin people. Some gringos who've been down here a while notice and comment on that. In fact, some have asked me if the Indio word is the Latin version of the N-word. And you know, I used to think that too, but I've come to a different conclusion. Because you see, indigenous people never toss that word around between themselves. Unlike the way black people use the N-word up in the States. By the way, the word Indio, the way Latins mean it as an insult, if you haven't figured it out already, it means idiot, dumb, retarded, stupid, backward, whatever. But note, I've been down here a couple of decades now, and I've never heard middle-class people say it to an indigenous person's face, only behind their backs, because I think they're afraid. Afraid of what? I don't know, because I've never seen indigenous people gang up on Ladinos, but in those little indigenous towns way out in the boonies, the people there are known to take the law in their own hands and lynch people occasionally and stone them and beat them in the town square. So indigenous people do know how to mete out justice, especially when the Ladino town police sit on their dead asses and do nothing. But I digress as usual. Man, did I digress. Where were we? Oh yeah, the possible dead young indigenous lady on the street that Jerry decided to avoid. Well, she may have been dead, but I'll bet anything it had nothing to do with alcohol. Because you could say that the indigenous people, although they're much poorer than the average Ladino, they're generally very humble, quiet, and reserved, and almost never make public spectacles out of themselves unless they're out in the street protesting one thing or another. They do that now and again, you know. In fact, as long as I've been down here, I've never seen an openly drunk indigenous person, much less one in his colorful clothes stumbling down the highway, slurring for he's the jolly good fellow in his native dialect. Though I've seen countless middle and lower middle class Latins in that condition. In fact, I'll never forget the time a couple years ago when I was in La Ceiba, Honduras. A place, by the way, that's not fit for man nor beast, but it's where you pick up the ferry to go to Roatan and Utila. Anyway, I was in a big modern shopping mall. They got a handful of nice ones in that ugly, sprawling, dangerous town of around 200,000. And I was sitting in a nice seafood restaurant owned by a gringo and his wife, by the way. And sitting at the table next to me was a typical Ladino family with a little money. You could call them nearly upper middle class, but really, I was to find out shortly, they had no class whatsoever. And as it turns out, I ran into the very same family the next morning on the hydrofoil boat that takes you to Roatan. So the father of the family, probably was around 40 years old, came over to me and said hi because, you know, we'd exchanged a few pleasantries the night before. I'll never forget he asked me if I was a Bee Gees fan because he had a Bee Gees t-shirt on. He told me his brother up in L.A. who was in the drywall business sent it to him. And thankfully I was able to repress my gag reflex till I got to the restroom. So I was stuck on the boat for around an hour, sitting next to this guy, who'd been blabbering away about his other relatives, the ones in New Jersey and my jammy, etc., the ones sending back Burmeses. And strangely enough, they all happened to be drywall empresarios, must have run in the family. Which is probably why the guy could afford to take his family to Roatan, because the passage was about $35 apiece round trip. By the way, that's why the islands of Roatan and Utila are not overrun with the poor and sweaty masses from mainland Honduras. Believe me, they'd love to move there if they could because, well, that's where the tourists are, right? It's that $35 boat trip that keeps out the riffraff. So anyway, this guy's blabbering away, and he got around to asking me a rather odd question. He said, you know, there's something that us Latins just don't get about you tall, handsome, white gringo guys. That's when I looked over my shoulder, and I didn't see anyone there, so I guess he was talking to me. Which, by the way, just goes to show how that gringo advantage works, because up in the States, I was a solid 6, and now I guess this guy's saying I'm kinda tall and handsome, maybe even an 8. Anyway, he says, us Latin guys just don't get it. How come so many of you tall, white, handsome gringos like going out with, even marrying, those short, dark, little Indio girls? Then he motioned to a group of people leaning on the boat's railing about 20, 25 feet away, and sure enough, there was a tall, white gringo with a very short indigenous girl. See that? He said. Check it out. And then he shook his head in disapproval. Then he said something like, look, she's half his size. I don't get it. And you know what? I really didn't have an answer for him, except to say, to each his own. Now, that incident on the boat sticks out particularly for me, because after that, he had my curiosity up and I kept my eyes open a bit, and I did see, even on that trip to Roatan, a couple of gringos with short, dark, indigenous ladies walking the beach and in the big hotels. But then I guess it's kind of like a trick of the human brain. For example, suppose you bought a brand new red car of a certain make and model. All of a sudden, you're seeing a lot of red cars of the very same make and model all over the place, where you never really noticed it before. Anyway, on that same subject, I can remember more than a handful of Latin ladies, that would be Latina ladies, you know, no indigenous blood or none they'll admit to anyway, asking me pretty much that same question about gringo guys and their love and romance predilections. And you know, Latin ladies you don't know are not about to come up to you and ask you a question like that. These were ladies I happened to know and had an acquaintance with. And still, it seemed to me they had a hard time spitting it out. And the question went pretty much like this. With so many beautiful, attractive young Latina ladies all throughout Latin America, why do certain tall, handsome gringos hook up with short, dark, indigenous girls? And most of them didn't say indigenous, they said Indio girls. Again, it's that classist, racist thing rearing its ugly head again, to which I always answer, to each his own. And to be un-PC in an equal opportunity way, I must say, occasionally I'll run into gringa girls who've hooked up with short, brown, indigenous guys. All you have to do is go to a popular beachfront disco, practically anywhere in Latin America, whether on the gringo tourist trail or not, and you're bound to see some of that. Which, by the way, typically infuriates the average Latino guy who always hit the discos, hoping to have a chance to meet a young gringo lady. Because rumor has it, within the Latin guy community, especially on the gringo tourist trail, that many young gringo girls come down to Latin America on vacation looking for a Latin lover because their boyfriends up north are, for lack of a better word, boring. As Latins would say, papa sin sal, which means a potato without salt. You got that? Papa sin sal. That's potato without salt. Or it could mean an unsalted pope. Because, you know, down here the pope is called El Papa. Anyway, that would be just the opposite of a smooth Latin lover, right? Now, I know I'm straying way off the point, but you can't believe how many emails I get from people asking me about love, romance, mating, and dating in Latin America from gringas and gringos. And what I get out of most of these emails is that up north, everybody's so stressed out about economy and debts and money, healthcare, insurance, pharmaceuticals, big brother, taxes, you name it, that it's taken its toll on people's love and relationship lives up there too. Seems like everyone wants to go back to simpler days, and yes, that's just what it's like down here in Latin America, off the tourist trail anyway. So, back to the question, did Jerry do the right thing by walking past this lady twice who he believed was very inebriated or dead? And by the way, just because Jerry talks about someone laying on the side of the road, don't think when you come down here you're going to see all kinds of vagabonds and people begging and living in cardboard boxes under bridges and in coffee sacks and such. I'll tell you that when you're off the gringo tourist trail, there's just not much of that at all. Sure, when you're in the medium or large-sized cities and you're driving through them, there are certain choice street corners where there are a lot of traffic and you'll see the odd beggar, but most of them are actually trying to sell you something or juggling coconuts, Ginzu knives, or flaming Ovomit dolls. And I'll tell you, it's on the tourist trail where you'll see that the vagabonds have turned begging into a real industry. By the way, Latins down here call undesirable street people who don't sell anything and just beg vagos. That's the first half of vagabond. Vago. So then why is it that on the gringo tourist trail, begging has become such an industry? Because gringos are soft touches, so we actually perpetuate that kind of thing. Whereas $10 to us is a short cab ride, or a nice tip to a porter, To most people in Latin America, it's a day's wages. And you know, when gringos are on vacation, we're all loose with the dough. 52 weeks a year, we might be skinflints, but on that two-week vacation to Costa Rica or Cancun, for a lot of gringos, it's almost as if money's no object. Put it all on plastic and we'll deal with it later. Oh, and by the way, the other day I ran into a Latin guy at a fashion event, which I'll report on later in this show because it was pretty cool. Yes, expat Eddie's girlfriend was on the runway again, and there's some really good stories to go along with that, so stay tuned. Anyway, one of the Latin guys there running the event said to me, "Johnny, what's a cheapskate?" Apparently someone had been tossing that word around. In Spanish, a cheapskate or a skinflint is a tacaño. That's tacaño. Meanwhile, another Latin guy standing around overheard that and said, "Yeah, I know a lot of people like that." But he qualified it by saying, "Gringos aren't cheap. No way. Except for the backpackers." No surprise there. But back to the point, whatever that was. Jerry, in his email, referred to some of my past shows where we were talking about what you should and shouldn't do if you hit a pedestrian or someone on a motorcycle, etc. Now, I never said you should perform a hit and run or leave the scene of the accident. I just said that's what most Latin lawyers will tell you off the record and what most Latins with money or means will tell you too. Now, I know what you're thinking. Wait a minute. How can that be? Now, we're all taught up in the first world that one of the worst things you could do as a driver is to hit someone and leave the scene of an accident, especially if the person's hurt. You know, if that happens up in the States, you'll probably lose your license forever and you'll be doing jail time too. Though in Massachusetts, it'll qualify you for multiple terms in Congress. Look at Ted Kennedy. Anyway, the subject of hit and runs here in Latin America never seems to die. In fact, just about 3 weeks ago, I was talking to a young lady who just got her driver's license. Her parents have money, she goes to a helicopter school, and she told me she took driver's lessons at a private driving academy. Yeah, there are a lot of private driver's ed schools down here. And believe it or not, zero driver's ed classes in high school, etc. Unlike almost every high school in the U.S. So as it turns out, all through Latin America, only 5% or less of all the drivers you see on the road have taken driver's ed. Which is certainly why nearly everyone breaks multiple traffic laws with great regularity. Something that tends to drive us gringos absolutely batty. In fact, some of us never get over it. Which explains why the number one unwritten driving rule in Latin America is the pedestrian does not have the right of way. So do keep that in mind next time you cross a busy street. Anyway, speaking to this young Latin girl who just took driver's ed and got her driver's license, she explained, for $100, she got 8 one-hour on-the-road driving lessons, and I guarantee that she'll get her license after the last class. In fact, she said, she didn't even have to go down to the driver's testing station or the license bureau. They had, get this, at the driving school, a car simulator, and that's how she took her test, on the simulator. Yep, she said she never even learned how to parallel park in a real situation. In fact, when I mentioned it, the look on her face said she didn't even know what parallel parking was. So, to anyone else down here who wants to drive and has more time than money, that's about 95% of the people, they'll never shell out the $100 for private lessons. Instead, they'll go down to the driver's testing station, wait in line for 4 hours to get a number to come back to take the written test. Then after that, wait a week or so, go into another line, wait 2 hours, get an appointment to take the on-the-road test. Of course, you'll have to supply the car. But I'm telling you, practically anything, including a riding lawnmower, will do. If you've ever seen a parking lot in a Latin American driver's testing station, you'll see dozens and dozens of unroadworthy pieces of junk and crap. It may look like a junkyard, but those are the cars people have brought to take their license exams in, even though most of them have lights that don't work, bad brakes, gauges that don't work, a broken window here and there. Yet new, fresh, green drivers are allowed to take their on-the-road tests in vehicles like that. So if you think Big Brother's got a foothold down here in Latin America, think again. So anyway, after I congratulated the young girl on receiving her license successfully, I brought up a sticky question. I asked her, point blank, what her driving instructor said she should do if she got in an accident or hit somebody. He told her, depends on the situation. She explained that he said, if you get in a collision with another car, stay in that car and call your insurance company right away. Good advice for anyone, right? And he said, if you're way out in the county in a desolate area and you get in a car accident like that, if there is almost no one else around and your car is still working, drive to the nearest gas station or populated area, then pull over and call your insurance company. He said, rightly, you don't want to be the lone person out in the middle of nowhere. Sure, if you take off, the guy you collided with will be irate, but he will follow you to the gas station. And then you can get the insurance company involved right there. Now, remember, if you have insurance down here, which only about 5% of people have, by the way, probably less, that means when you collide with somebody, he most likely will not have insurance, unless he has a very late model nice car. If not, you can assume they don't carry insurance, and he or she will be afraid if the cops come. Now, in Latin America, the person with insurance always has the upper hand. So bottom line there, at least carry liability insurance. And that won't cost you any more than $120 to maybe $200 a year. And by the way, like I said in the past show, when you buy insurance of any kind, even the cheapest insurance, it'll have full AAA-like coverage. So if you have a flat or you run out of gas or your car just breaks down, they'll tow you to the gas station or mechanic of your choice free. It's one of the benefits of your policy. But I mentioned all that in a past show in great detail. Anyway, the young lady went on to say that her driver's ed instructor told her that if she hit a bicyclist, a pedestrian, or a motorcycle, she should get the hell out of Dodge and keep on going. Which, of course, is totally against the law. But when you have driver's ed instructors and lawyers and wealthy Latins telling you the same thing, all I can say is the name of this show is The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. And I'm telling you what it's really like to live here in Latin America and what the law is and what people actually do and don't do. I'm not advising you to break the law in any way. I'm just telling you what people do down here. Nothing is black and white. It's all variations of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great. So there we have part of the ugly. Oh, and one more thing on that point. A nice upscale Latin lady I know hit a guy on a motorcycle with her late model Honda. She stopped because it was the right thing to do, she said. The kid had a couple of broken ribs and a concussion, so he ended up in a first world private hospital. Her car insurance paid for it, of course. By rights, he should have gone to one of those very crappy national healthcare public hospitals. That's what would have happened if he'd have been hit by a chicken bus or by someone driving a polished turd of a wreck with no insurance. Because you see, in Latin America, even if you have just basic liability coverage, it'll pay medical expenses in a private hospital for all involved. And the motorcyclist, not only did the guy not have insurance, he didn't have a driver's license and his bike wasn't even registered. Now, she and or her insurance company could have pressed charges against the guy, brought him to court for damages and to repay the hospital bills and stuff. But she didn't. And unlike in the U.S., the insurance company doesn't go after cases like that either. Because it's just a big waste of time. The guy has nothing. He works at a job that makes $300 or $400 a month. And if she did take him to court, he'd probably end up doing some jail time. But the case would drag on probably for years, and it would waste everyone's time. Even though it was 100% that idiot's fault. So how does a gringo eliminate 90% of those problems? Well, number one, have insurance. Number two, don't tailgate. Number three, don't drive at night. Number four, don't break the law. But the laws down here are extremely flexible. Okay, so that said, changing gears a bit now. I mentioned earlier that I met up with expat Eddie again at a high fashion runway show. So Eddie alerts me when a cool one's coming up, and we go to a couple of them a year. More on that in an upcoming show, but here's what happened before the event. Now, do note, over the past few years when Eddie and his fiancé travel by car to these events, his fiancé brings along their maid, who's been working for them now, I guess, like 7 years. But this time, no maid. Then Eddie kind of laughed and said, "She quit. She won the lottery." I said, "No, Eddie, you mean she won one of those street corner lotteries where little guys are running around selling you books of lottery tickets? I thought that was a scam and nobody won." He said, "No, no, Johnny, not that lottery. She won the cell phone lottery." I said, "You don't mean she entered one of those stupid cell phone text messaging lotteries?" Now, you've heard me talk about those multiple text messages you get down here in your cell phones. That's why so many of us gringos turn our phones off at night so we don't have to hear the messages as they come in because they make a tone. Then Eddie said, "No, not that cell phone lottery. Not quite. She won the cell tower lottery." And I said, "What?" He said, "Johnny, you're not going to believe this. My cleaning lady and her husband own a tiny little plot of land with some driveway, chickens, etc. They live in a little 400 square foot block building with a tin roof that happens to be up the side of a big hill." Eddie said a few months ago, a couple representatives from the big cell phone company, Claro, pulled up, knocked on their door, showed her and her husband a copy of the land title from the local municipality land registry, and made her an offer she couldn't refuse. They offered her a 10-year lease on their property to put up a cell tower. So it took her and her husband about 2 seconds to sign the agreement. So within a month, there was a shiny new cell tower with one of its tripod legs butting right up against the kitchen wall. Now, when people win the cell tower lottery like that, they can move, but they never do. They don't care if one of the tower legs ends up in the bathroom. That's their house, and they're going to live there. Then Eddie said, I know, Johnny. They're going to get fried. And their dogs and driveway chickens too, but you just can't tell them that. They don't get it. Then Eddie said, what made it worse was the tear she had in her eye when she said she was going to quit and that she'd won the lottery, the best thing that ever happened to her. He said, how could I rain on that party? And what made it even worse, Eddie said, is she sold out cheap. She could have held out for $6, $8, even $1,000 a month. Then they really could have moved to a nicer neighborhood. But poor people in that situation almost never do. Oh, and by the way, the cell phone reps came bearing gifts to clinch the deal. Free high-end smartphones for the family, like they knew what to do with them. Her husband, Eddie said, can't read or write. So when you come down to get your boots on the ground, don't think it very strange when you see a cell phone tower that looks like it's grown out of a little tin shack. Yep, you'll see that, and it does look weird. So then it's logical to ask, has anyone at all down here ever heard of the dangers of microwave towers and cell phones? In a word, no. In fact, only enlightened gringos ever bother to bring up the subject. And about cell phone radiation, well, I've never met a single Latin who seems concerned about it at all, and you never see articles in the paper or reports on the news or anything like that. Just like the uninformed everywhere, Latins want newer and better devices. And of course, Latins sleep with their cell phones, walk around with them all day in their pants pockets. Ladies commonly tuck them into their cleavage. And if you were to sit down with the average Latin person and try to explain it all to them, they'd be alert and pay attention because you're a gringo, but inside they'd be thinking, those crazy gringos. Okay, getting towards the end now, so once again, I'm going to remind you to go to www.thenewexpat.com. Check out famous expat blogger John Galt, and I'm there too. And there's my YouTube channel, of course. Check out the slides that go with the show. Oh, and one last thing, for those of you who've been wondering if I'm going to do another expat insider seminar, I think it'll start the week after this 4th of July. So if you're interested in getting some real boots on the ground off the tourist trail with me holding your hand, do send me an email. theexpatfiles@gmail.com. I'll put you on my early bird discount list. So, as always, I'll give repeat offenders a big discount, and people who sign up before May 1st will get a $500 discount off the normal price and $1,000 off the regular price for two people double occupancy. So, find out where the American dream has gone. It's down here in Latin America now. If you come down, you'll definitely get your plan B in action and off to a fast-track start. We'll show you exactly how to VWYF, vote with your feet.
South of the border.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want me to help you sort out your own Latin American plans, schedule a one-on-one consult with me. Just send an email and let me know at theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.